This is Susan Livingston reporting the global extreme weather for the week ending 22 April 2016, the 46th annual Earth Day. Next Friday, 29 April, is Arbor Day, so I'll lead off with a tribute to trees, starting with a report from Take Part, titled The Redwood's Last Stand. After only 160 years of logging, there remain just 120,000 acres of old-growth redwoods of the forests that once covered more than 2 million acres of California, from Big Sur to the Oregon border. Most now survive in state and national parks. I say only 160 years of logging because the life expectancy of redwoods is on the order of thousands of years. 2,000 for coastal redwoods and 3,000 for their inland cousins, the giant sequoias. These largest of Earth's organisms are built for survival. They absorb more carbon dioxide than any other trees. A 2012 study found that large trees older than 100 years store the bulk of a forest's carbon. They continue to grow and sequester carbon even after 1,000 years, reaching heights of 115 meters with trunks 9 meters in diameter. Their branches and house-sized canopies provide habitat for a third of the ecosystem's species, including a host of endangered species, and play a key role in the health of the larger ecosystem. Their foot-plus thick bark shields the trees from fatal fires. A red-tinged chemical responsible for giving the trees their namesake color protects them against insects and fungus. They have adapted to the absence of rainfall by harvesting water from the ever-present fog, but now warming temperatures at the southern end of the coastal redwood range are rolling back the region's famous fog banks. A 2010 study found that fog levels along much of the coastal redwood range diminished by 30% over the past 60 years. Researchers are saying that big trees are dying at 10 times the rate of smaller trees around the world. A die-off of redwoods could have global implications. Some of the redwoods dropped nearly half their foliage between the summers of 2013 and 2014. Typically, sequoias drop around 5% of their foliage over a summer season. Todd Dawson, a redwood expert and a professor at UC Berkeley, notes that formerly, quote, it would take 1,000 years for temperatures to change over 2 degrees. Now it's taking 3 years, unquote. If the biggest, most formidable trees on the planet can't survive global warming, can any? As if global warming isn't challenging enough to the trees, humans further complicate the picture with the destructive practice of topping trees. The Taos News asks for an end to this practice of forcing trees into a form that contradicts their nature, shortens their lives, and robs them of their dignity. The vigorous growth that results is only weakly attached, often requires ongoing care due to tangling, and attracts pathogens. The wound invites decay and causes a loss of energy production at the very time that more energy is needed for healing. These stress factors lead to the decline of portions of the tree or even to its early death. The best thing to do for the rainforest, according to Jose Sarocan, a biologist at the National Autonomous University of Mexico, is to leave it alone, reports Quartz. Even cultivating land along the edges of rainforest preserves increases exposure of canopy trees to high winds and other extreme weather that might otherwise have been absorbed by surrounding brush or grassland. Writing for the Montana Independent Record, George Werthner, author and ecologist who served on the Western Watersheds Project, says that responsibility for fire disaster lies with private landowners, with county commissioners who continuously approve new subdivisions in the wildlands-urban interface, and with the Forest Service, who continue to use outmoded control methods, such as logging, thinning, and prescribed burning, which actually makes matters worse by improving air circulation and increasing the oxygen supply to the blaze. What these so-called fuel treatments do provide is profit from harvested timber and grounds for the Forest Service to claim that they're doing their jobs. The best fuel treatment would actually be to reduce the flammability of homes. The International Center for Integrated Mountain Development, a coalition of scientists from India, Pakistan, China, Afghanistan, Nepal, and Bhutan that was created in 1983, is reducing deforestation through tree planting programs, as well as the introduction of bio-briquette production as a cottage industry. Bio-briquettes are made of organic scrap, can be used for cooking or heating, and burn with no smoke. The recent outbreak of deadly earthquakes started in Myanmar on 13 April with a 6.9 magnitude quake that killed 2 people in India and injured 120 in India and Bangladesh. The next day, Vanuatu saw a 6.0 magnitude aftershock, and Japan had 2 foreshocks, magnitude 6.0 and 6.2, of the violent 7.4 magnitude earthquake that struck the city of Kumamoto on the island of Kyushu on Friday, 15 April. At least 11 people were confirmed dead, and some 760 were treated in hospitals, in addition to the 9 who were killed and 850 injured in the foreshocks. Rescue teams continue to search ruined houses for several dozen who are feared to still be trapped under the rubble. Authorities evacuated more than 40,000 people, and about 200,000 homes were left without power. So far, the Nuclear Regulation Authority said no irregularities have been recorded at 3 nuclear plants on the island of Kyushu and nearby Shikoku. According to Tokyo-based journalist Mike Fern, speaking on CNN, the Sendai nuclear plant on Kyushu Island houses the only 2 operating reactors in Japan, and there were no adverse effects from the quake or the foreshocks. Fern added, quote, "The Genkai plant, which is shut at the moment, didn't report any problems after the quake," close quote. In the face of more than 100 aftershocks in the region following the initial Thursday tremor, there was media reassurance that the quakes wouldn't trigger volcanic eruptions, until Mount Aso erupted. In apparent collusion with Japanese authorities, who claim they are diffusing panic by refusing to raise the alert level any higher than 2 on a 5-point scale, the only report I saw of the tsunami alert that was issued was in the International Business Times. Maybe it's a matter of a cultural gap, but I'm certain Western media would be exaggerating the disaster instead of downplaying it. Yoichi Masuzoe, governor of the Tokyo Metropolitan Government, has an article in the Huffington Post dated 18 April in which he speaks of green initiatives in this world's largest metropolitan area with 37 million citizens as if all is well with his world. Maybe it's a matter of a deadline gap. But it's hard to imagine HuffPo would be so slack. Masuzoe says cities are on the front line of the impacts of the planet's changing climate, from typhoons and other extreme weather events to rising sea levels, and he urges Tokyo to accept its special responsibility for global leadership and sustainability. Quote, "We cannot wait for multilateral treaties to protect our citizens," unquote. He speaks of initiatives in renewable energy, hydrogen-based transit systems, water infrastructure investment, and disaster preparedness. The Weather Network reports a 7.8 magnitude earthquake struck late last Saturday in Guayaquil, Ecuador. At least 570 are dead, 155 are missing, and more than 7,000 are injured. Damage to almost 2,000 buildings is estimated between $2 and $3 billion. There were 2 aftershocks of magnitude 6.0 and 6.2 on Wednesday. EcoWatch reports that March broke the previous high temperature record by the greatest margin yet seen for any month, according to Japanese Meteorological Agency data. March was 1.07 C hotter than the 20th century average, up slightly from February's stunning 1.04 C. Reports from the UK Met Office and the US NASA and NOAA use somewhat different baselines but draw the same basic conclusions. The extreme weather consequences of the 1 degree rise have been, altogether now, far more severe than expected. And due to the lag between time of emission and resulting atmospheric levels, we are on our way to 1.5 C no matter what we do. At 2 degrees, we lose 30-50% of species to habitat loss. We have an explosion of tropical diseases. And we have 5 to 9 meters of sea level rise that will inundate major cities and the millions of toxic sites they house, such as refineries, nuclear plants and waste dumps, chemical factories, gas stations, etc. The Danish Meteorological Institute announced a record early onset of the melt season for the Greenland ice sheet, reports SkyMet Weather. The beginning of melt season is defined as the date that sees 10% of the ice melted. This year's melt has already progressed to 12%. The previous record for earliest start was 5 May 2010. The average is late May to early June. The Week explains that potential melt impact is more catastrophic in the case of Greenland because the ice sheet rides a landmass and holds enough water above sea level when frozen to cause a 6-meter or 20-foot rise in sea level when thawed. With a focus on Southeast Asia, weather historian Christopher Burt gives a comprehensive heatwave overview for Jeff Masters' Wonderblog using data compiled by climatologist Maximiliano Herrera. Cambodia, 15 April, national all-time record high of 42.6 C, surpassed the record 42.2 C set just 2 days previously. Prior to this year, the maximum measured temperature in Cambodia was 41.4 C in 1960. Laos, 13 April, national all-time record high of 42.3 C, surpassed the record 42.0 C set in March 1933. The low on 13 April only fell to 30.5 C. Thailand, 12 April, high of 44.3 C, missed the national record from 1960 by only 0.2 C. At least 50 Thai towns and cities broke or tied their all-time record maximum temperatures. The low on 15 April only fell to 31.4 C, likely the warmest low ever measured in the country outside of the Bangkok metropolitan area. Thai Vista reports 2 heat-related deaths last Friday. Malaysia, 10 April, regional all-time record high of 39.2 C in the central region missed the national record from 1998 by 0.9 C. Singapore, 13 April, high of 36.6 C, missed the record from the city-state from 1983 by 0.4 C. Myanmar's all-time heat record is 47.2 C, that's 117.0 F. Recent weather data has been, quote, sketchy at best, unquote, with several 46.0 C reports. Vietnam, 15 April, regional high of 41.8 C at Thuong Duong missed the record at that site from 1966 by 0.9 C. But the real story for Vietnam has been the historic drought, said to be the worst in 100 years, that has impacted the fertile Mekong Delta region and also the rest of mainland Southeast Asia. Other heat records have also been set in Asia and Africa. China, 16 April, a high of 40.5 C was one of several heat records broken. India, 16 April, a high of 46.0 C is not a record for the hotter locations in India, but the season is young. Along the more temperate southeastern coast, the previous record of 37.2 C, going all the way back to the 1870s, has already been broken 35 times this year, and by an astonishing 1.9 C. The Maldives, 16 April, a high of 34.9 C broke the previous record of 34.8 C set March 1999. The Maldives, 16 April, a high of 34.9 C broke the previous record of 34.8 C set in March 1999. Burkina Faso, 13 April, a high of 47.5 C, broke the record 47.2 C set in May 1984. Guinea-Bissau, 12 April, a new national record may have been set, but the actual daily maximum is not known due to one of many weather station failures in the region. A reading of 43.2 C was recorded, just 0.4 C below the all-time record high. A reading of 43.2 C was recorded, just 0.4 C below the all-time record high. Minnesota Public Radio reports record-breaking heat in the Pacific Northwest of North America, with Seattle, Washington's high temperature 16.6 C above normal, the largest anomaly in National Weather Service history. As forecast by the massive fires in Oklahoma and Kansas, fire season has started unusually early as far north as Minnesota, where warm, dry, windy conditions called for an open burning ban across much of the state, reports CBS local affiliate WCCO. Lisa Gormanson of the State Department of Natural Resources reports that 98% of fires in the region start when people ignore the ban and asks that they contact local solid waste disposal departments instead of starting trash fires. The ban does not apply to small campfires. Wisconsin is also at risk for fires, reports WXOW. In Canada's western prairies, the relatively dry winter and extended periods of above-seasonal temperatures that have marked the winter and early spring have triggered an early start to the fire season. As of Tuesday, this stalled high-pressure cell, or REX block, saw 16 of 40 fires in Alberta burning out of control, reports the Weather Network. Leadership reports a life-threatening heat wave in Nigeria, quote, linked to poverty and the inability of government to provide utilities like power and water, unquote, which drives indiscriminate felling of trees to obtain cooking fuel. Worldwide, more than 4 million people die annually from indoor air pollution, led by Africa, where women and children are disproportionately represented due to air pollution in the kitchen. At the government level, Nigeria contributes to environmental degradation and global warming through lack of emissions regulations for generators, automobiles, and factories. The Pacific Daily News reports that a state of emergency has been declared in Palau, in the Federated States of Micronesia, and in the Marshall Islands due to ongoing drought. Subcritical water shortages are also being experienced in Guam and the Northern Marianas. The Malay Mail reports that the durian harvest in the northern states will be a month late and suffer a 10-30% decrease due to the drought. The price of freshwater fish has doubled, and that of produce is up by 20%. The Sun Daily reports a doubling of calls to the fire department, as well as a surge in health problems, whether dehydration and heat stroke from exposure or infection from spending too much time indoors. Relief is anticipated soon with the waning of El Nino. Hindustan Times reports that a team of Japanese experts from the Society for Energy, Environment, and Development, or SEED, in association with the Institute of Environment and Sustainable Development professors, will train 40 Indian teachers in, quote, participatory community-based climate change and disaster risk reduction, unquote, curricula for schoolchildren. India's peninsula continues to swelter with temperatures up to 42°C, reports the Duncan Herald. To the north, a record-breaking 43.2°C was reported in Kanpur and rising. That's 110 Fahrenheit, and schools remained open. The New Indian Express says a heat wave is defined as any five-day period when the maximum temperature exceeds the average maximum for the same date from 1961 to 1990. By 5 degrees Celsius. First Post interviewed cultivators in India and found that the insurance settlements for crop damage don't cover the cost of cultivation and can be as low as 20% of the gross market loss. From the broker's perspective, a single extreme weather event results in such ubiquitous loss that higher premiums must be charged in order for there to be a profit margin. The government is subsidizing premiums in order to increase market penetration. The International News reports that federal and state authorities in Pakistan are already working on their response to the heat wave that's predicted for this June in order to avoid a repeat of last year when a state of emergency was not declared until 23 June, resulting in over 1,300 deaths and 40,000 heat strokes. Mass graves are already being prepared on Karachi's outskirts, reports NDTV. The death toll has reached 200 in the most recent back-to-back flooding events, reports Dawn. The interaction between climate change and deforestation and overdevelopment has resulted in an increase in avalanche and slide activity in Pakistan's rugged terrain. Here's a Philippine Sun Star author who speaks my heart. After explaining the link between climate change, extreme weather, and the increased duration and intensity of wildfires, and then enumerating their causes, virtually always traceable to human carelessness, the article concludes, quote, "Let us learn to live in harmony with the extreme side of nature," unquote. The United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization carried out studies in 2011 on behalf of the UN's Commission on Genetic Resources for Food and Agriculture, and found that natural biodiversity is a key asset in adapting to increasing temperatures, more frequent flooding, and persistent droughts, and their accompanying increasingly robust pests and diseases, reports All Africa. Willie Bett, Secretary of Agriculture, Livestock, and Fisheries in Kenya, lists obstacles and challenges to protecting this asset, including habitat destruction due to overdevelopment and lack of coordination among regulatory agencies. Kenya's Gene Bank provides asylum for more than 2,000 plant species from 165 classes. Climate change is ruining our planet, increasing the rates of extreme weather events, helping spread dangerous diseases, killing off endangered wildlife, and bringing ruin to local farmers. But a new study in Nature Climate Change suggests that some local farmers are actually seeing higher crop yields because of the carbon that we're pumping into the atmosphere, reports Vocative. However, many crops suffer when fed too much carbon dioxide, and climate change causes heat waves, droughts, and flooding, none of which are exactly healthy for our crops. Additionally, while vegetative mass might increase with increased carbon dioxide concentration due to decreased water loss, nutritional value declines due to lower concentration of nitrogen and minerals. Taking losses from increased temperatures into account, the study concludes that we'll probably see a net gain in wheat crops, but a net loss in corn, with losses and gains for soybeans and rice still too close to call. Further on the downside, unlike the carbon advantage, the damage from rising temperatures does not level out. Summit County, Colorado Citizens' Voice reports that a new study published in Science Advances explains how northern jet stream slowdown causes extreme weather in the northern hemisphere. The anthropogenic heat engine makes its contribution to extreme rainfall events by increasing the amount of moisture available to great weather systems, but warming accounts for only a 7% increase in heavy rainfall, and what we're witnessing far exceeds that amount. The study related flooding in the Balkans and Greenland ice melt to intensification of the amplitude of the northern jet stream, which sets it up for resonance with the more sedentary waves of the subtropical jet stream and causes weather systems to become stationary. An earlier study in Nature Communications explains the further contribution of a 20,000-year cycle in Earth's orbit that reached a tipping point 4,000 years ago when weakening summer sunlight reduced the equator to pole temperature gradient and, along with an intensifying El Niño climate pattern, pushed the jet stream toward greater curviness. WNCT gives a 60% chance of La Niña before the end of the year and promises a more definitive forecast by July. Radio Canada International explains that ocean currents often overcorrect after El Niño, ushering in flooding in drought-stricken regions in the tropics. So, look for flooding in Southeast Asia, stronger monsoon in India, drought in Peru and Argentina, fewer typhoons in East Asia, and a colder, snowier winter in Canada. The Asian Development Bank urges the Asia-Pacific region, home to 60% of the world's population, to transition to low-carbon energy sources and warns that without proactive action to reduce carbon emissions, the region would easily account for more than 40% of global emissions in the next decade, reports the Philippine Star. There are currently 10 countries operating emissions trading systems in the Asia-Pacific region: Australia, China, India, Indonesia, Japan, Kazakhstan, Korea, New Zealand, Thailand, and Vietnam. A report from the New Zealand Royal Society finds that the east coasts of both the North and South Islands are sensitive to erosion and inundation caused by climate change, reports Radio New Zealand. The impact would be exponential, making 100-year sea level events into annual ones in some places and making storm surges much more potent. Scoop alleges that New Zealand's emissions trading scheme is based on carbon credits from Russia and the Ukraine that are not backed by emission reductions, and that the trading itself is linked to organized crime. In addition to its susceptibility to corruption, a February 2016 review by the Ministry for the Environment concluded that the New Zealand ETS has not significantly reduced domestic emissions or influenced business decisions. Australian charities are launching a weather lottery, reports UK Money. Players purchase a $25 ticket for the month, and predict the daily noon temperature in 7 pre-selected cities. Winners are announced weekly. Mercury reports that wharf cargo and vehicle loading infrastructure were seriously damaged when extreme weather took the crew and passengers of the Spirit of Tasmania II by surprise as it was loading at Melbourne on 13 January at about 6 p.m. The ferry broke completely free of its moorings and turned 90 degrees to the dock before the crew was able to get it back under control. No one was injured in the incident. The ship suffered minor bow damage and was back on the water in a couple of days. An investigation is underway. The Center for Climate Research in Singapore says that extreme weather patterns from climate change pose new challenges to Singapore's water sustainability. Despite an MIT study that warns that 1 billion more Asian people will be water-stressed by mid-century, and despite the government's priority on grey water reclamation and the building of a 5th water desalination plant, Singapore citizens are clearly more concerned with air pollution, cleanliness of public areas, and vector-borne diseases, according to a recent survey reported in Today Online. Some 650,000 flights pass through Singapore annually, and that figure is set to rise to more than 1 million by 2025, reports the Straits Times. From the tone of her article, author Lydia Lim's main concern seems to be potential competition from Indonesia for that air traffic, in the event Indonesia is successful at rising to the International Civil Aviation Organization safety and technical standards. 12 people, 3 of them children, died in a plane crash in Papua New Guinea early last week when their small plane went down in a swamp, reports ABC. An investigation is underway. The gold and copper mining company Freeport Indonesia's anniversary celebration journey up Karstens Pyramid Trail resulted in the death of one climber, presumably from hypothermia, when the group was overcome by severe weather, reports the Jakarta Times. Other climbers from the party of 30 were checked out at the hospital and released. The Taipei Times reports that the industry and energy sectors are the largest beneficiaries of the fossil fuel subsidies funded by taxpayers, while together using 45% of the nation's energy and contributing more than 60% of Taiwan's carbon emissions, according to 1986 chemistry Nobel laureate Li Wansei. Transitioning to sources of renewable energy and developing carbon capture and storage technologies are key in addressing global warming, says Li. He predicts that the 2C threshold will be crossed in the next 25 years at the current rate of emissions increase. At least 7 people died as a tornado struck Dolores, Uruguay last Friday, and one is still missing as extreme rainfall caused flooding throughout the region over the course of the weekend, reports Sign of the Times. Over 3,600 people have evacuated their homes. Rainfall rates of 5 to 7 centimeters per hour were reported. Hailstones the size of hen's eggs came down last weekend with roof-puncturing force and killed 4 people in Hunan, reports the China Evening Post. 5,000 people have evacuated their homes and more than 900 homes have collapsed. Some 387,000 people have been affected by the storms. International Business Times reports that 18 people were killed and 33 more were injured when a construction crane erected by the state-run China Communication Construction Company's Fourth Harbor Engineering prefab specialists collapsed during high winds. 4 of the injured were in critical condition, while 18 were treated and released. An investigation is underway as to why housing for 139 workers was erected adjacent to such heavy equipment amid stormy weather, including winds strong enough to topple trees. Some $3.1 million has been set aside to offer compensation to the families of the victims. Just 4 months ago, 74 people were killed or left missing after a man-made mountain of construction waste collapsed onto buildings in a nearby city. Police officials have detained 11 people in connection with that earlier incident. Category 5 Cyclone Fantala became the Indian Ocean's most powerful storm on record early last week with winds of more than 270 kilometers per hour. Strong enough to throw heavy cars and peel the bark off of trees, reports CityLab. Fantala reached peak intensity north of Madagascar and diminished as it tracked southeast. With October's Patricia in the eastern Pacific and February's Winston in the South Pacific, Fantala is the third record-breaking tropical storm in less than a year. Bob Henson at Weather Underground attributes this intensification of tropical storm activity to, quote, record warm sea surface temperatures in 2015 and 2016 triggered by a strong El Nino on top of longer-term warming caused by human-produced greenhouse gases, unquote. AccuWeather reports a severe band of storms carrying a month's worth of rainfall from Texas to the Dakotas made its way eastward starting Sunday, triggering flash floods in Texas and Louisiana, but bringing drought relief farther north. In contrast to the average regional monthly total for April of about 5 centimeters, Houston's International Airport got 10 centimeters in 1 hour, and some suburbs got 18 to 35 centimeters in 6 hours. Rain continued through midweek with up to half a meter in some parts of Houston and ongoing flood watches across the southern part of the state. School was canceled for more than 1 million students. The Weather Channel reports that at least 7 people died. In Harris County alone, more than 1,000 homes were flooded, and water rescues were carried out for 1,222 people and 70 horses. More than 100,000 homes lost power. The governor has declared a state of emergency in 9 counties. In central Texas, the Killeen Daily Herald reports that many crops that had been replanted due to the earlier drought will have to be replanted again since they will have been washed away in the flooding. According to Andrew Orison, lead forecaster at NOAA's Weather Prediction Center, the same system has dropped more than a meter of snow on parts of the Rockies, reported Wired. KBZK in Montana explains that an Omega block had control of the weather in North America, causing a high to stall over the Midwest and Northeast and stalling a low to the west, bringing storms and severe flooding in the plains and storms in the Rocky Mountains. Denver International Airport canceled more than 700 flights last Saturday. The Chippewa Herald reports that Wisconsin is making progress on limiting phosphorus pollution of lakes and streams from factories and municipal sewer districts, but unfortunately the majority of phosphorus in lakes and rivers comes from agricultural runoff, and much of the repair work is done at private expense. Extreme weather events such as heavy rain and wet springs increase pollutant levels. After a taste of spring weather, temperatures in Canada plunged again and brought freezing rain to northern Ontario, reports the Weather Network. The cold is expected to persist until late in April. Climate Central explains the Clean Power Plan, the suit against it, and another amicus brief in its support, this one by scientists. It states that no other U.S. policy will do more to achieve necessary unprecedented greenhouse gas emissions reductions. 24 states have sued to stop the CPP based on, quote, regulatory overreach, unquote, and coercion by the EPA. 18 states filed in support of the CPP, citing long-term economic viability and citizen health and safety. At least 6 key cities, including Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and South Miami, Florida, in addition to the big 3, New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, have signed on. Those in support of the CPP claim that the EPA's power to cut carbon pollution from power plants is undisputed, and that if a state chooses not to comply with the plan, the EPA has authority under the Clean Air Act to regulate the power plants directly. Engineers in favor make the point that the grid is already nationalized. The case will be heard on 2 June in the United States Circuit Court of Appeals in Washington, D.C. According to the 21st annual EPA U.S. greenhouse gas inventory, there has been a 9% drop in greenhouse gas emissions since 2005, but there was a 1% increase in 2014 from 2013 levels due to increased demand for heat that winter and to increased demand in the transportation sector. Quote, total U.S. greenhouse gas emissions were 6,108 million metric tons of carbon dioxide equivalent in 2014. By sector, power plants were the largest source of emissions, accounting for 30% of total U.S. greenhouse gas pollution. The transportation sector was the second largest source at 26%. Industry and manufacturing was the third largest source at 21%, unquote. And agricultural emissions? The data from the oil and gas industry show that, quote, methane emissions from the sector are higher than previously estimated. The oil and gas sector is the largest emitting sector for methane and accounts for a third of total U.S. methane emissions, unquote. Again, there is no mention of agricultural emissions. In December, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo directed the state's Public Service Commission to create a clean energy standard that ensures New York gets 50% of its energy from renewable sources by 2030. A discussion by the National Resources Defense Council finds that a shift to renewables will add less than 1% to the cost of the typical residential electric bill in New York, while creating benefits totaling $1.8 billion by 2023, aside from the sizable public health gains, plus $5.2 billion in reduced air pollution, 20,000 renewable energy jobs, and $1.3 to $3.7 billion in reduced natural gas prices. Florida Governor Rick Scott denies allegations that he forbade discussion of climate change in the state, but nor has he acknowledged it or the threat of sea level rise on this most threatened of coasts, reports the Panama City News Herald. A 2008 study by the Florida Coastal and Ocean Coalition found that, quote, rising sea levels will increase erosion of beaches, cause saltwater intrusion into water supplies, inundate coastal marshes and other important habitats, and make coastal property more vulnerable to storm surges, unquote. St. Andrew Bay Resource Management Association partnered with students from Deanne Bozeman School in a program called Grasses in Classes to create a living shoreline along St. Andrew Bay. The students use coastal marsh plants and bags of oyster shells to form reefs, which are intended to break wave energy so the sand can stabilize and restore the bay ecosystem. Here's an insightful statement from the Trinidad Express. Quote, it's very anthropocentric of us to think that we can save the planet, or even that the planet needs us to save it. It would be more honest and accurate to say that we are trying to save our place on this planet. The planet will go on long after humans make it unsuitable to support our species, unquote. Author David D. Ramjohn wants Trinidad and Tobago to take a circular approach to waste and wealth by reframing waste as a resource and to become the recycling hub of the Caribbean. According to a press release from the Center for Biological Diversity, the American public owns nearly 650 million acres of land and more than 1.7 billion acres of outer continental shelf and the fossil fuels beneath them. Some 67 million acres of U.S. public lands are already leased to dirty fossil fuel industries, an area 55 times larger than the Grand Canyon National Park. Nearly one quarter of all U.S. climate pollution already comes from burning fossil fuels from public lands. Remaining federal oil, gas, coal, oil shale, and tar sands that have not yet been leased to industry contain up to 450 billion additional tons of potential greenhouse gas pollution. Eleanor Bravo of Food and Water Watch says, quote, continuing to sell off fossil fuels from beneath our federal lands is no better than outright denial of climate science. Let's put an end to drilling, fracking, and mining for publicly owned fossil fuels, unquote. The Bureau of Land Management leased more than 2,300 acres of Kansas and Oklahoma for oil and gas exploitation on Wednesday in Santa Fe, New Mexico. This number represents a significant reduction from the original 36,000 acres originally on the auction block. LifeZet announced that Mark Morano's film, Climate Hustle, will be featured in selected theaters as a one-night event on 2 May. The goal of the documentary is to, quote, tear the cover off global warming hype and expose the myths and exaggerations, unquote, by delving into the history of climate scares and debunking outrageous claims about extreme weather. No further comment. Thanks for listening to the Global Extreme Weather Report. Until next time, this is Susan Livingston.